Welcome to In Season, where we explore connections between people, land, plants, and wildlife here in the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm Teresa Retzloff, and today on In Season, we are exploring a group of plants that absolutely terrify me. And I am speaking, of course, about houseplants. Houseplants. And joining me to talk me off the cliff and comfort me and absolve me of all my sins in killing so many houseplants in my life is Kristen Earhart. She is the owner of Earth in Hand. It's a houseplant company business here in Astoria. Welcome, Kristen.
Thank you, Teresa.
It's so great to have you here. This is a conversation I've long been wanting to have because this truly is a group of plants that is so mysterious to me, and which I am a killer of houseplants, absolutely. And I love going into a house with plants, and yet it is not my home environment. So before we really dig into all of that, tell us about yourself, how you ended up here in Astoria on the North Oregon coast, and how did you get interested in working with houseplants?
A lot of good questions there. So I would say my journey started with traveling just in general. I'm actually originally from Pennsylvania, and I kind of did a lot of traveling on the West Coast and eventually really decided I fell in love with Oregon, and that was where I wanted to be. I was in Portland for quite a few years, and then eventually kind of realized that Portland was not the place for me, and realized that we kind of came out to the coast a lot to visit and decided that the coast was exactly where we wanted to settle down. So we found ourselves in Seaside for a bit, me and my husband, and then we decided to move to Astoria because we had been working in the area for a bit. And now we've been in the community for a couple months here, and we love it so much.
It's so great to have you here. And I think, you know, especially with someone with your skill set, I love that you, as someone who is like a big grower of outdoor plants, I love the indoor plant thing that you're bringing. So talk about houseplants. Have you always grown houseplants? Is this something you've always been good at, or did you develop this skill later on?
Actually, I actually grew up in a house where we had no houseplants at all. I never had any houseplants growing up. They weren't really a thing in my life. So I always thought it was really interesting that at a certain point, I think I just maybe, you know, moved into a place and decided maybe I need a houseplant or two to brighten up the place. And then I would say during COVID, mm-hmm. as where a lot of our journeys began with a lot of our interests, I just kind of started going a little bit more crazy with just buying a couple more houseplants and a couple more. And then eventually I kind of started experimenting with a lot of things that I would see online. I think my first experiment happened with an avocado seed. And I had several avocado seeds, and I tried to sprout all of them. And I think all of them sprouted, and I was absolutely amazed. And so,
yeah, but then you have an avocado tree.
I know.
In your house.
And that was kind of the kicker there, is I'm like, okay, well, if I can do that with an avocado tree, I could do that with any houseplant. So I just kind of began to experiment more. The avocado trees did not make it very far, as you can imagine, because they were in my house. So I had one that actually did. I still have it to this day.
Really?
Which is, COVID. So it's been a few years and a few moves as well.
How big is it now?
It's pretty big. It's probably about 3 feet tall. It's right now dealing with some, it's been on and off dealing with aphids, but, you know, it's doing all right still. It's still kicking.
So then you obviously at a certain point started propagating so many plants that you needed to start either giving them away or selling them.
Right.
And you've turned this into a great business, right? So you both propagate plants, you sell plants, you also do workshops, you do propagation mm-hmm. workshops. I mean, this is a really cool thing where you don't have a storefront. But talk about how you do what you do.
Right. So I think what happened is, I was at my home just kind of learning how to propagate plants, and that just really went rampant really quickly, where I found myself just propagating every plant that I had multiple times, multiple ways, and then I was just left with all of these houseplants. And I, being someone who likes to be involved with doing like a lot, you know, going to local markets and shopping and stuff. I just had this thought. I was like, oh, I wonder if anybody in the community would be interested in buying some of my houseplants. So it all started with just one market, and kind of from there just organically started to grow. And I feel like eventually realizing that we needed a little bit more space for the houseplants, we did open a shop up in Seaside for a brief period of time, for maybe about a year. And that journey was really, really lovely. It was awesome having the shop open. But I think what I really realized is that in the community, I feel like people like gathering together and coming together all at once, if that makes sense. Like mm-hmm. markets and pop-ups seem to be a little bit more of a lucrative way for people to do their shopping, because mm-hmm. as opposed to going to individual stores. I had really gotten the inkling that that was a little bit more successful. And then I also started getting a call for doing, you know, home calls, business, you know.
So going to people's homes or businesses and troubleshooting or maintenance or?
So in the beginning, I think it was more like, hey, I have this plant and I'm not really sure how to take care of it. Could you come and check it out? And then that just turned into one thing after another. Hey, I have, you know, a bunch of plants at my house. Can you come and help me repot them? Or, you know, there was quite a few different inquiries in that sense. And I found myself trying to have the shop open and then simultaneously trying to do these other things and realizing that it all kind of aligned to me being just mobile, just being, you know, free to move around and do things at my own pace and at my own time. And then I can accommodate more community-based projects, such as being a part of the markets and pop-ups, but then also being able to help people with their plants or businesses with their plants. And I think like where my journey really started to really sail off was when Sleeper Coffee, Roxy from Sleeper Coffee, had reached out and asked if I would be willing to come and help them take care of the plants there. And that was kind of, that's still my kind of my passion project, because I was able to really like expand the amount of plants that she had just by propagating. So I was able to go in there and create, she had a vision for it, and I was able to really like kind of help that vision come to life, but in a way that we can, you know, afford. And it's not, you know, you're not just going out and buying a bunch of plants. You're actually like propagating them, and you're just using resources that you already have, and at the same time trimming up plants that just actually just need to be trimmed anyway. So it's a win-win.
That is so cool. And it does create a beautiful environment. We were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, that houseplants or shop plants or office plants do create a positive environment. I mean, I've read studies where they help with people's mental health, that like a home that has houseplants in it. And you were saying like in offices, it makes people more productive.
Absolutely. Yes.
I mean, these are studies. You can go out. There's research has been done, which makes sense to me, because I think nature, being around nature, is so positive. And I'm, you know, I'm fortunate that most of my job is outside working with plants. And so I get a lot of nature in my life. And so maybe that's why I don't mind so much that my house doesn't have plants in it. But for a lot of people, their lives are very indoors and not necessarily engaged with nature. So if you are able to bring that indoors, I can see how that positive effect.
Right. Especially around this time of year too. I always like, I feel like this is kind of the time of year where I really realized how valuable this was, mm-hmm. because when I started doing markets, it was during around these, you know, these
the winter
months.
Yeah. So we're recording this in winter. If you're listening to this in the middle of summer, this was recorded in December. And so, you know, and I wanted to ask you about this too, because, you know, much like plants outside, there's seasonality, there's hot season, cold season, same within our homes. I mean, what your house is like, the temperatures mm-hmm. in the summertime or in the spring are very different than winter, when oftentimes, you know, you have a heating system that turns on, the air might be drier. How does that affect plants, and how do you recommend that people pay attention to that?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because especially being in the climate that we are, it does get very moist, and which a lot of tropical plants do like. Sometimes just with the heavy moisture in the air right now, people around this time of year in the rainy months might start to see their houseplants suffer a little bit. And that does make a lot of sense, because if you're on the same watering schedule that you were in the summer when it was really dry, you're going to see a little bit of a change. You might see your plants start to suffer, be a little bit too wet. So in my opinion, I think a lot of a lot of houseplants. It's trial and error. I was saying I have killed so many houseplants
in
order to be able to learn how to take care of them. And I will still say there are houseplants that I'm not actually very good with keeping alive. So I think it's kind of finding your strong suit, mm-hmm. and also, like I said, trial and error, experimentation.
Yeah.
I think that like around this time of year, just experimenting with watering your plants a little bit less, even the tropical ones, is a really good way to kind of learn. Excuse me. You can kind of see your plants. They will, the moisture level in the soil, mm-hmm. you can kind of monitor that. That'll be a really important thing too. If you just kind of stick your finger in the soil, if your soil is really moist, like you just, especially around this time of year, you don't want to give it any water at all. Most plants around the wet season want to dry out completely. Then on the flip side, you have a home that has heating and it gets a little bit dried out. So you might actually have to do the opposite. Whereas your plant didn't really need as much moisture before, it might need a little bit of extra water around that time of year.
So it's really just paying attention.
I
mean, it's like plants outside. You need to pay attention to what's going on, and that can change. And so if you're used to like, well, I only have to water this plant, you know, once every 2 weeks. Well, depending on the environment in your house this time of year, you might need to do more.
You might. And exactly. And there's no, unfortunately, exact guidelines because of all of the factors to go by.
Yeah. And each plant's going to need something slightly different.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the thing, too, because, you know, tropical plants, I mean, most house plants are tropical in nature, mm-hmm. which is also cool because you get to see and grow plants that you would never see growing outside.
Very cool.
But they are from very different environments. I mean, you have like cacti, which are like, you know, like to grow in sand or like weird rocky stuff. And then orchid type, like the things that are like, those ones fascinate me. Things that are just they grow in the air.
Yes. Yeah. Epiphytes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I how does that happen?
I know. Yeah. So there's another plant that is super common that actually I saw when I came in is the Christmas cactus. Mm-hmm. That is also an epiphyte. So out in the wild, those grow in little crooks of trees, in like little pockets of soil that they find, and they mostly suck moisture and nutrients out of the air. That's what those plants do, and that's why they don't need much of anything. Like even if you see like a lot of Christmas cactus, they, you know, sometimes you'll see they don't have much soil in them. The soil's really low, compact. Like they don't need it. They don't really need that much soil. They are mostly just getting things out of the air. And there's a lot of plants that are like that. Orchids are also like that.
So, but they must need certain like light environments, or because I know like my sister, she's so good with houseplants, it kills me. I mean, she is brilliant. She has a house full of plants; they're gorgeous. And I think she just had her Christmas cactus start to bloom again. She was really proud of this, and I'm like, oh my god, that's so cool! How did you get that to bloom? I would have killed it long ago. And so you have to understand what that plant needs.
Exactly.
So what are the different soils that plants might need? Our engineer and KMUN program director Jack Harris brought in his little house plant. If you go to my Instagram, you can see a picture of it. It's a cactus. It's like, we think it's a cactus.
I think it's a Ripsalis cactus. Yeah.
So it's tiny. His lovely wife Tracy propagated it. What kind of soil is that in? Is that like a sandy soil? Is it just potting soil? I mean, did you just use potting soil?
I think, this is like probably a little bit more of like a barky kind of potting soil, or like a little bit more. It's definitely got a little bit more room for air. It's not very compact.
Mm-hmm.
The soil is really important. That's something that I've been really, really trying to learn about and teach myself. And
you
there's
don't,
so many types.
Yeah, you don't want to just go to the store and get a bag of potting soil that you might use on your outdoor plants.
Yes.
And pot your orchid into it,
exactly.
You know, and then expect it to live.
Mm-hmm.
Orchids are, I hate to keep bringing them up because I feel like I get a lot of people who ask me about orchids.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, someone gave you an orchid as a present. That's cool. Maybe just think about it like a cut flower, and then when it dies, you know, just compost it, because they're really hard to keep alive.
I know.
And it's not just hard to keep alive, but then to get it to rebloom.
Right.
It's crazy.
It is a tough one. Orchids, they're not my strong suit, but I have learned a lot about them over the years. And I know if there's one thing that I've learned, when your orchid is done flowering, you actually want to cut, you just want to cut the flowers back completely.
Mm-hmm. So don't let them necessarily die back, but just cut it off.
Yeah, exactly. And the sooner that you cut it off, as soon as the flower is like dead, you can cut it off. Because what it's going to do is like, basically anything that is attached to your plant, it's sending nutrients in too. So mm-hmm. if you cut those off, those are two points that
yeah.
don't need to have nutrients sent anymore. And it's just going to preserve the life of the plant itself. And
yeah.
I've heard a lot of people say that they don't love to keep orchids around after they're done flowering because they're not very
interesting
looking. But I do promise that if you do, you know, kind of let it do its thing, let like the flower, you mm-hmm. know, die off, and then chop them at the bottom. And mm-hmm. then just, you really don't want to do much when it's not in its flowering stage. You can, mm-hmm. it almost wants to go into like a dormancy of sorts, which
yeah.
is a lot of plants around this time of year do. Like, for example, I've learned that cacti don't want to be watered in the winter almost at all. Like even the, like that many months.
Are they following light triggers, like outdoor light triggers, even though they are inside? Because I know for a lot of plants, like when daylight falls below a certain number of hours, they just kind of stop growing.
Right, right. And I think that's what happens. I think most plants have that like internal clock type of thing going on. So like mm-hmm. trying to mimic their environment is also really good. So for example, if you have grow lights at your house, which I do. I have plenty of them so I can keep everything alive
and
thriving.
It's got to help your mood too. Isn't that like the lights you're supposed to sit next to in the wintertime?
Yes.
You must be the happiest person.
It's pretty fantastic. my basement is definitely my happy place.
Before we go any further, I just want to take a moment. I'm so into this conversation. If you are just joining us here on KMUN for today's In Season, I'm talking with Kristen Earhart. She's the owner of Earth in Hand. It's a houseplant business based here in Astoria. And I'm loving this conversation because houseplants, I am just a notorious killer. They are not my group of plants, but I find them fascinating. And I'm curious about them because they're so tropical and interesting. And I don't know I'm not good at growing them, but you are. So it's really just understanding, you're talking about mimicking the environment. So you have to know a little bit about where does this plant actually come from?
Right.
Where was it? It maybe probably wasn't born there.
Right.
But where would it have naturally grown?
And I do think that obviously sounds very daunting. And the whole idea of trying to figure out every single houseplant is definitely a whole thing to have to accomplish.
What would you say are some of the like the best sort of starter plants, the easiest plants? If people want to just like, I'm not like, you know, if I came to you, I'm not going to start growing houseplants because I'm just going to kill them. But if I wanted to start and maybe I don't have the best track record with them, what would you say would be some good plants to start with?
I always recommend a pothos. I personally don't know if it's pothos or pothos. I get that question all the time, mm-hmm. and I say either one works just fine.
Okay.
But that one I think is the most, I mean, it is absolutely beautiful. It's your very common, like vining, just greenhouse plant that a lot of people will kind of like
trail along a wall.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly.
Oh yeah, I know that plant.
So
those are pretty easy.
They're very easy. They're a huge statement piece. So if you're looking for just like one plant to have in your house, it's like easy and will bring a lot of life to your home. And also what I love about pothos is they are super easy to propagate and control because you can chop it just to make it look exactly the way that you would like it to. And
so
then you can
prune it. You keep
yeah.
it to a certain size.
And then you can use those to create, you can use those starts to create new plants. The best part about pothos is that it actually has a natural rooting hormone in it, in the little node where you propagate that helps it root faster. But it will also help other houseplants. And this is something I'm telling that I usually teach in my propagation classes, mm-hmm. but I'm going to give you guys this little tip.
Yeah.
It's a really fun one. If you take a little piece of pothos and you put that in with any other sort of propagation, it'll help that propagation grow its roots faster because it's like basically going to the store and buying rooting hormone and putting it in with your plant. It's really,
what?
Really amazing.
That is so cool. It's like willow.
Yes. Yeah.
In nature, willow water, like if you soak willow bark,
yep.
Willow stems in water, like that water, it has a rooting hormone too.
Exactly.
Oh, man,
so
that
like
is
that's
so
why
cool.
I'm like, if you're going
to
buy one house plant, that one is usually incredibly inexpensive
mm-hmm.
and it's like a great one to start with. And if you want to propagate, if you want to start with propagating, that one I say is a great one to learn with because it's
okay.
very forgiving and you have a very high success rate at propagating.
That's a good one.
Okay. Yes.
Are there any others that you think are good starter plants?
I personally always recommend, I know it's like kind of cliche, but I recommend a cactus for starting out as well.
Really? I think those would be terrifying.
I think like a cactus is actually really easy and it makes you feel empowered. Like I think most people, when they feel like they can take care of a cactus, they're like, oh, okay, I can take on something a little bit more difficult. So I think it's a good way to build confidence because cactus, they actually really don't want much of anything. They don't really want that much water. They actually don't want a lot of your attention. You know, I tell people.
Just kind of want to be left alone.
Just don't look at it. Yeah. But for the most part, they, what I've realized, I think if you're paying attention to one factor amongst all others with houseplants, I think airflow is really important. So for cacti, for example, I think just having well-draining soil and a pot that has airflow.
Okay.
Is really important for all plants.
So they don't get stagnant.
Exactly. And I think that a lot of people, when they ask me about their plants, you know, oh, I have this plant at home. It's not doing well. They describe what's happening. And the first question I'll ask is it in something that has holes in the bottom or is it sitting in something that doesn't? Because
so it's
possible you take it out and there is just a bunch of water in the bottom and it's just not going to be able to breathe. It's not going to want to grow. It's just.
You're drowning that plant.
Exactly. And I've noticed that with cacti a lot. I noticed some people will put cacti into pots that don't have drainage. And if you water that, overwater it, like overwatering a cactus, sometimes they can come back. But if it doesn't have drainage, the chances of it coming back are a lot less likely. So those are some factors I feel like that are important to pay attention to.
Yeah. Are there plants that you would steer someone away from if they were just starting? Like ones that are actually a lot more complicated to take care of and tend to end in tragedy?
Actually, yes. This is a really good question.
Because people
asked.
Are like, ooh, what about this? And then it's like, ooh, if you don't really know what you're doing, this isn't one you should grow.
Right. And I will
I'm never going to grow this plant.
A Monstera. Okay. So I get a lot of requests for Monsteras. And I think that if you have the time and the energy to take care of the Monstera, I think that, you know, it's possible. But there are a lot of factors, Monsteras, that are, you know, they're a little bit more difficult than some other houseplants. And I think it's a really beautiful plant, but it can also so easily become unruly that it's not as easy to maintain. So that's the biggest request. And that this is I've also found over time, because myself, I haven't done so well with Monsteras, but I get a lot of inquiry. That's the biggest inquiry that I get from people is, I have this Monstera that I need help with. Almost across the board, it's always a Monstera. And usually it has to do with a lot of factors, lighting, watering. Monsteras don't like a lot of water, but they need
some
a certain amount of water and lighting. They are more finicky than some. They need support, so they need like a moss pole in order to keep their shape so they actually look nice and they don't get all leggy. So they are definitely, and that's the thing, is it's like learning a whole skill set just for this one plant. So that is one that, as it's really beautiful, it is common and it can be easy to take care of.
But you have to make some effort.
You do, yeah. Like if you want to just have a house, if you want to just have a couple houseplants around that you can just enjoy and you don't really have to do much for, I would advise against getting a Monstera first. You know, maybe work up to that a little. Or
I could see that.
Yeah.
I would say the other thing that, you know, maybe what some people don't realize is like when you go to the store, maybe they come and get a plant from you, and it could be this little tiny plant in a tiny little pot. But that plant might turn into like a 6-foot-tall tree.
Right.
You know, so how often do you think people get kind of caught off guard with like, I'm buying this little tiny plant for my house and it's so cute and I love the leaves and it's really pretty. And then, you know, are you invited to people's houses and they're like, what do I do with this tree?
Right.
I can't even get it out of my house.
Absolutely. Yes. And I think a lot of that is you can control all of these factors, luckily, with potting. Most plants will not grow any bigger than the pot that it's in.
Okay.
So most of the time, if you know that you don't want your plant to get too big, you can keep it in a pot. And while it might get root bound, most plants, they'll be okay being root bound. They will continue to grow, but not at the rate of getting larger, too large for you to take care of. Another option would be, like, for example, I noticed there was a snake plant here that is quite large and there's a lot of snake plants in it. And that could be something that, in that case, if you don't want your snake plant to get any bigger, you can take it out. You can take the whole thing out and you can actually separate. You can probably cut that thing pretty much in half and separate a bunch of those little snake plants. And then you can repot your original one back in and
keep it at a smaller size.
Exactly. It'll stay like that for...
So there are ways to control.
There are ways.
You just have to be willing to do that. I mean, it's like plants outside.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm feeling a little bit better about all of this.
Yeah.
Because it makes sense to me, and like that the care for them in many ways is just understanding what the plant needs, what environment does it want. They're not all going to be the same.
Right.
And so you can't just do like a one size fits all if you're going to have a variety, but that you can have a very lush indoor garden.
Exactly.
But you just have to pay attention.
Yeah.
So we're not out of time yet, but we're wandering in the direction of being out of time. And so before we do that, I want to talk about like how do they find out more about what you do? Like if people were interested, if they wanted to find you at a market or they wanted to find out about your, you know, your houseplant services, you know, do you have a website? Do you do social media? How do they find you?
Yeah, I am on social media, Earth in Hand PNW. I will always be adding events. I'm always trying to do at least a pop-up or a workshop a month. Mm-hmm. Right now, during this time of year, I'll be a part of a bunch of markets coming up this Saturday. I have one at Necessary Magic. It's going to be a plant pop-up sale, and there's going to be mocktails there by Mocktail Orange.
That sounds fun.
It's going to be really fun. That's from 1 to 3 on Saturday. And then I'm just going to be part of various markets around, such as the Fort George Market, Breakside, and Obelisk. So you can find me at pretty much most markets around. And then as far as workshops, I don't have any announced right now, but coming in January, I definitely am going to be doing some. And what I usually focus on is propagation classes, but I'm always looking for other ideas of things to expand on.
Yeah.
And then also you can find all my information for my services on my website. That's earthinhandpnw.com. And I also have a full houseplant guide on there, too, that I've created that explains pretty much all the plants that I sell and most of your common plants. So if you ever, you know, need any reference or anything, you can go right on there and check that out.
So I definitely encourage you, if you're a houseplant person, if you're having challenges or you're just curious or you're just houseplant curious, or maybe you're like me and a total killer, but you want to move beyond that, you know, reach out, get in touch.
Yeah.
You know, I think that and certainly like, you know, if you do the social medias, I think I follow you on Instagram, and that's a great way to find out what you're up to and, you know, find out ways to connect.
Right.
And or, you know, if you're going to get a coffee, if you're in Astoria and you go to get a coffee at Sleeper Coffee, you can see a lot of the plants that Kristen propagates there and get a sense of what that environment is like,
right.
You know, and I think that that can also just be really inspiring. When we're looking, when you go to someone's house, like when I go over to my sister's
and you
house,
get
I'm
that
like,
inspiration
oh, look at
from
all those houseplants. I mean, I always try to talk myself down because I'm like, don't do it. Just don't do it. But it's wonderful. And I do love being in a place with plants. It is really nice environment.
It is. And then on that note, too, if anybody in the area, I do help with diagnosis for pests on plants. I help with repotting. I can just come to your house and check it out and move your plants around if you feel like the lighting's not working out. I do business watering. I can do a multitude of different things. And also if you're planning to go away at all and you need somebody to water your plants, that is also a service that I offer.
So. These are so many good things.
Lots of options.
I know. And I think, I mean, I feel like that's such a wonderful way to help people, you know, enhance their living environments or their working environments and make them more positive. I mean, we talked about, you know, these are positive environments. So thank you, Kristen. I love the work that you do and I'm so inspired by it. And I really look forward to running into you at markets and seeing you around.
Thank you so much for having me, Teresa.
Thanks. This has been great. And thanks to everyone for joining us for today's In Season. And we'll talk to you next time. Thanks a lot.